God tells us to forgive, right? But when and how should we forgive? Are there times when we shouldn't forgive? Can forgiveness actually hurt someone? Bob Inyart's teaching on forgiveness shows us what the Bible really teaches about forgiveness. The three-part forgiveness series is available on DVD video or in audio on MP3 CD by calling 1-800-8-ENYART. Or you can get the video, CD, or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We'll be talking today about a little bit of money spent in the stimulus package, $130,000 to buy diversity manuals in Omaha for their public schools. That's got to be good. And the United Nations has named a new chair of their disarmament committee. So who might that be? They have a disarmament committee, which is focused on preventing the nuclear arms race and nuclear disarmament. When there's a chair of a committee at the United Nations is an assembly of nations, so it's a country. So what country would they have named to head up their disarmament committee? We'll talk about that. Barack Obama has said of his mother that when she was dying of cancer, he said she wasn't thinking about her own mortality. She wasn't thinking about how she could possibly get well. All she was thinking about was her health insurance and that she didn't have enough health insurance. And it turns out there's a new book by a reporter with the New York Times that disputes that and shows that she had plenty of health insurance. So even that, it's so funny. When somebody's a liar, it comes so natural. If you're in rebellion against God and you're willing to kill children, you're willing to violate thou shalt not murder, you're willing to violate thou shalt not steal by being a socialist systematically, and you're willing to violate God's command thou shalt not commit adultery by advocating sex outside of marriage, that it should be legal, that it shouldn't have a stigma, and even consenting adults, it should be legal to seduce your neighbor's husband or wife. So if you're willing to break all those laws, what's a little thing like lying about everything that benefits you? What's a little thing like that? Then also, our friends at Personhood USA, I'm looking at an email sent out today from Colorado Right to Life. And this says, let's see, who's the? This is from Donna Ballantyne. Donna Ballantyne, office manager, Colorado Right to Life. By the way, if you ever want to stop in and say hi to those guys, they're downtown at the Capitol. If you ever go visit the Capitol with your kids, you might want to call ahead to Colorado Right to Life. And their office is three doors down from the Capitol on Grant Street. So the Capitol is between Broadway and Grant. So at the corner of Colfax and Grant, you just head north and you go three doors and there you are at Colorado Right to Life's office. So Donna sent this out. Dear friends, our friends at Personhood USA, located in Arvada, can use some help for a while processing incoming mail. Help is needed on Tuesdays and or Fridays, starting around 10:30 in the morning. If you can help, or if you would like more information, please email drewheimer@gmail.com. Now, there's a period in there, but with Gmail, do you need the period? Do you need the period? You know, Gmail has all kinds of Google's email. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to email Drew right now. drewheimer@gmail.com, and I'm going to say in the subject, Drew, do I need the period? Okay, so that's going off, send, and I have a psychological quirk, So I have my Gmail set up so that when I hit send, it doesn't actually go for 10 seconds. So I could undo it. Even now, oh, it just went. I could undo it. And it's a weird psychological quirk. You send your email, and as soon as you hit send, you think, oh, no, I should have said such and such. And then you could undo it and then write such and such and then send it again. Now, why I can't get that right the first time, I have no idea. But so I sent that out to Drew. So his email is drew.heimer@gmail.com. Drew, D-R-E-W dot H-Y-M-E-R at gmail.com. You could also call Personhood USA at 303-456-2800 to speak with Drew Heimer or Jonathan Sutherland or any of the other group of wonderful guys and gals there at Personhood USA. And by the way, they're in Arvada on Ralston Road. You know, Ralston, that's 58th between Kipling and Wadsworth. Thank you so much, Donna Ballantyne, Office Manager, Colorado Right to Life. All right. Thank you, Donna, for forwarding that to us. You know, I don't know if my audience knows that I used to work at Microsoft, and I've mentioned that. I had a technical background. And I can't recall, I'm pretty sure I've done this, but I can't recall for sure. Have I mentioned the internet startup that I attempted? And it did fail. We gave it the good college try, and it was about a 2-year project, and it was called 900 Email. 900 being a service where you'd have to pay anywhere from a penny or more to send an email to who you want to send an email to. You know how we all get junk email? We all get junk email, and I get tens of thousands of junk emails in a year. And sometimes, even though they try to filter it out, it makes it difficult to see your important email. It could get discouraging. So with 900 email, each person who uses that, or you could use your own Yahoo email or Gmail, each person gets to set the postage on their own inbox. So you could say, well, I want people to have to pay a penny to send me an email, or a nickel, or a dime, or if you're the head of a company, maybe a dollar, maybe $100, whatever. Whatever you want. And you could put people on different tiers. So the general public maybe has to pay a dime, but your family pays zero, say, for example. And for me, I get more junk mail from my family than from anybody else. But you could set it up however you want. And we hired one of the sharpest programmers in the country, an architect, who, to his credit, he was the architect at one of the major airline reservation systems where you go online and you make your reservation. Well, he was the architect for one of those systems. He was our CTO, our chief technical officer, and the president. I was the founder and CEO. The president of our company, it's called 900 Email, Inc., and we had 900email.com, and it failed. It never came to pass. But the president was, and what a coup this was, it was Jim Fanella. Jim Fanella had just left Yahoo. He was their senior VP of marketing. Senior VP of marketing at Yahoo, responsible for about 30% of their annual revenue for some years. And he was just extraordinary. And Jim Fanella and I would fly out to Silicon Valley, and we'd make our pitch. And we'd get in to see the key people, the senior executives at Microsoft there in Silicon Valley and Redmond. I had worked at Redmond for about a year for Microsoft at their mothership, the big building at their complex there. And we'd get in to see the folks at Yahoo, and we saw the right folks too, and we pitched them. But there was a difficulty, two difficulties. The one difficulty is, at that time, their focus was to sign up another 2 billion people on email around the world, people who are dirt poor. So that was their focus, and so this focus was different. This would not be for people who were dirt poor. But even dirt poor people don't want to be flooded with junk mail. But the second difficulty was, for this to work, email had to be secure. You could get an email right now from anybody, and a hacker could send off an email and make it look like it comes from your mother with her email, like ConnieSharon@gmail.com, for example. And it's not from her, but it's from somebody that's pretending to be her. Or they could pretend to be your boss at the chemical plant. And they could say, we're going to get a shipment at 3:30 this morning, and we want you to be there and have all this, or we got to make a delivery. And it could be a fraud. It could be a con. It could even be a terrorist ploy or threat. And so we made an effort to get the primary email providers, including Yahoo and Microsoft, Hotmail, and all these big providers, AOL, to make email secure. Because email had to be secure so that when you open it, you have a high level of confidence that it, in fact, is coming from the sender and not from somebody else. And also, email, when you send an email, it travels over the internet unencrypted. That's the normal form. And so hackers could capture your emails and read them. And they do. They search for emails, especially that say credit card in them or expiration date or username and password. They capture those emails by the hundreds of thousands, and they look for people's account numbers, and that's how people's accounts get hacked. There are other ways, but that's a major way. So for our 900 email to work, which would pretty much put an end to spam, for it to work, people, their emails would have to be secure, and they wouldn't be readable by the general public or hackers. So it really would have helped the integrity of the entire internet. But alas, that has not come to pass. So it's hard to put postage on an email and have it secure if the whole entire email infrastructure is insecure. So our system didn't happen. Okay, Drew. Drew responded, and he said, "Bob, you're being cryptic." He obviously wasn't tuned in, and he doesn't know what I meant when I said, "Drew, do I need the period?" And I'm going to reply, "So you don't need the period." So when, if somebody says my email is bob.enyart@gmail.com, you could email it to them that way if you want to, but you don't need the period. You could just leave it out. So because I just emailed drewheimer@gmail.com, but I didn't include the period, and he replied, drew.heimer, and I'm going to put, "Thanks, Drew. You answered the question." Okay, and I'll put a smiley face there. All right, so if you can help Drew or Jonathan Sutherland or Keith Mason or Guabe Garcia Jones, Jennifer, the whole crew there at Personhood USA, if you can help out on Tuesdays or Fridays, please email Drew or give them a call. You could also go to personhoodusa.com and use their contact information. All right, now, Omaha Public Schools, they got some of the stimulus money. And if you track the stimulus money, it's pretty much a complete scam. We need to put in a dry well in our front lawn at our home, a dry well where the water that comes off your roof down your downspout, where it has somewhere to go. So we're going to put in a dry well, dig a big hole, and put a 50-gallon drum with rocks in it and around it and plastic over it, and put the pipe into that, so that there's somewhere for the water to go, better than how it's going right now. And so that project is shovel-ready. We have a shovel-ready project at the Enyart household. The Obama administration couldn't find a shovel-ready project if it hit them in the head. They couldn't find it. And boy, did they waste hundreds of billions of dollars on scams. And over the past year, we've talked about some of the scams that the stimulus money was spent on, money to create jobs, where it's obvious it created no jobs whatsoever. In this case, it was $130,000 to buy diversity manuals for Omaha public schools. And this this diversity manual teaches that the government creates advantages that channel wealth and power to white people, and that the schools should take action for social justice. Now, how's that? That's not surprising to anyone. Is it surprising to you? No, it's not surprising to them. It's not surprising to me. There is, of course, still to this day, tremendous racial tension in America and around the world, because liberals are wrong when they say men are basically good, and the Bible says men are basically sinful. We are sinners fallen from God, and we can be forgiven through Jesus Christ. And so that's two very different worldviews. The liberal worldview, which is there are no absolutes, but right and wrong is relative, and even truth is relative, increasingly they say, especially the atheist and agnostics. Truth is relative even, which is a meaningless statement, but they believe that increasingly. So you have these two worldviews, the atheistic worldview and the conservative worldview, and the difference between the two is so stark that if liberals were right and the Bible is wrong, the Bible says that all of mankind is fallen in sin. And liberals say that men are basically good and they're humanist, and they think if you just throw off the shackles of religion and family rules and let anybody who wants to be a family, then everybody could rise to their inner greatness and we'll all be good. And so either people are basically sinners or they're basically good, and the world is filled with evidence that people are basically sinners. Look at the history of the world. It's written from one war to another, from one assassination to another, from one civil war, from one world war, from one regional war to another. That's the history of the world. Pick up a newspaper and read about the crime and all the tension and the difficulty and even the hatred. And go to family court and see what it's like in family court. Or talk to somebody who started a business and has a partner or two. Or talk to a landlord who has tenants. Or talk to somebody in the office about office politics. Or family politics. Just talk to them. And of course, children, we need to teach children how to lie, right? We need to teach them how to lie because they're basically good. We need to teach them how to lie, how to be selfish. Isn't that right? We need to teach them how to disobey and teach them how to hit their brother. Oh, we don't? They just do all those things naturally. They do them naturally. Even though they know right from wrong, they're born with right and wrong written on their hearts. Now, of course, the Bible says that, and it took Harvard until the year 2010 to figure it out. Harvard finally figured it out. You know, their children's studies. Remember we reported this on Real Science Friday, where these PhDs took children and they devised really brilliant studies to find out what infants and toddlers, before you can possibly teach them certain things, before they can talk, before they, all they can say, you can't ask them a question and get an answer. And so they found out that children, babies, are born with an innate sense of the laws of physics, that babies understand the basics of the laws of physics. Now, most grandmothers don't understand the laws of physics. I'm only kidding. They do. They don't realize it. But babies understand, and babies understand basic rudimentary mathematics, arithmetic, and they understand right from wrong. Now, how is that possible? How could you find out whether babies, infants, toddlers, you know, within the first half a year to a year and a half, around there, how could you find out if these babies understand these things? Well, they were rather brilliant in their efforts, and I'll give you an example. They set up a puppet show, and they had on the stage, they had blocks. And a puppet will put a block and another block on top of it and another on top of that. So you got three blocks piled up, then it'll take them down, and everything is fine. And the baby's just looking and thinking, all right, this could be more interesting, but okay, you got blocks piled up on each other. Well, then they do an optical illusion. They make it look like they're piling the three blocks on top of each other, and then they remove the bottom block, and the top two blocks are suspended. They don't fall. And the baby stares at it as if to say, what is going on? How did that happen? Why didn't those two blocks fall down? Because the laws of physics would tell you with universal gravitation that they should fall down, but they're not. And so they realized that a baby can understand when the laws of physics appear to be violated. A baby. And they did the same thing with mathematics, and they did the same thing with right and wrong. They have a puppet show where they have puppets that are playing with their toys, and then some mean puppet comes along and he takes one of the toys. And the kids, they could see their reaction. And of course, you have to be very careful that the researchers are not biased in the results. But that has become a science in and of itself today, and a tremendous amount of attention put on that. But when you have a puppet show and one of the puppets does something that's not ethical, the babies show that they realize something is wrong. Why did that puppet take the other puppet's toy? They know right from wrong inherently. And why is that? The atheists can't figure it out. It's a mystery to them. Because we all start our lives as a single cell. A single cell so tiny you can't see it. So how is it that in that single cell, so tiny that you can't see it, that we could pass on to our children information about right and wrong, and information is not physical? The laws of morality are not physical. The laws of logic are not physical. And so how is it that the baby could know that? And also mathematics. They do a puppet show, and they give, say, a ball to a puppet, and then they give a second ball, and all of a sudden the puppet has three balls. It's like a magic trick. And the babies will stare, trying to figure out where did the third ball come from. So that keeps their attention way longer than if the numbers are right and there's no magic trick. Where does instinct come from? Animals have instinct. Scientists used to think that animal behavior was all learned until they started really putting their attention on this. And they found out that, hey, there are plenty of animals that do things, very sophisticated things even, that they never learned, and they do it right the first time. How could that be? So you have birds, not very big birds, which fly from North America to Hawaii thousands of miles to an island they've never been to, and they get there. Now, that navigation, that ability to navigate, that bird starts as a single cell, a cell so tiny you can't even see it. Just imagine, and if it doesn't get to that island, it's not going to be able to find all its cousin birds and reproduce. It's crucial for the survival of that species that they find this little island in the Pacific. But the bird starts out as a single cell. So how do you get into the instinct of the bird that it has to navigate to an island thousands of miles away? What if you went to a town in Idaho, you had a walk there, and it turns out the only way you can live is if you and all your descendants walked to that town in Idaho, and then you had a baby and you didn't tell him what town or that he even had to go to a town. You didn't tell him, and you didn't tell him where it was in the world. And that baby had to walk, unguided, walk to that town in Idaho. Otherwise, he would have died out. All your descendants, the whole species would die out unless every baby just on their own decided to walk from where you live to a town in Idaho. What are the chances that would happen? There is no chance. This is all evidence that the Bible is true. Let God be true and every man a liar. So the world is filled with injustice. The world is filled with people who hurt other people and people who hurt God. So it's not surprising that stimulus money would be used to buy books that are inherently racist. Inherently racist, and it's all over the world, people who hate other people because they're different. Because they're different. Just give people an excuse to express their sinfulness and they'll do it. So Obama education stimulus money spent to buy books about power to white people given out to the Omaha public schools. And then we have the United Nations naming North Korea as the chair of the Conference on Disarmament. That's just hysterical. I mean, the whole world is desperately trying to get North Korea to stop building nuclear arms since the country is run by a lunatic and a communist who denies people freedom of speech, freedom of travel, freedom of association, freedom of religion. Somehow liberals don't care much about that stuff these days. So the UN puts North Korea as the chair of disarmament, even giving them more respect when they should have none. Then it was the New York Times reporter Janie Scott who wrote a book, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother, that says she had plenty of health coverage for her ovarian cancer, and she had a regime of surgery and chemotherapy. So when Barack Obama said the only thing his mother was thinking about when she was dying was not about death, not about how to recover, but about how bad the insurance companies are. It's just making it all up, right? Just making it up. And use your mother's death, your mother's disease, as a political ploy and lying to people who want to be lied to. So the fact that Barack Obama would be one of the most wicked people in the country who even rejects, if you recall, at Christ Hospital in Illinois, where he was a senator, U.S. senator, there was a law that if a baby was aborted and it survived, you had to care for that baby because it's no longer part of the mother now. It's out of the mother and it survived. You can't kill it or starve it to death or poison it. And Barack Obama even opposed that. He even opposed caring for that baby. So the most wicked become the leaders, that's common.